Hey there, welcome to Harvest to You. I'm Pastor Mark, and we are really glad you're joining us today. If you'd like to connect with us or learn more, head on over to harvesttoyou.org. If you're near us in Armstrong, Butler, Allegheny, or Westmoreland County, we would love to meet you in person. Join us any Sunday, 9 o'clock or 10:45. We'd be honored to have you.
I want to show you a graphic. We are working through a large sermon series. It's taken us quite some time to get through all the different nooks and crannies of it that we entitled Flow of Change. It's all about how you change as a Christian for the better. How does Jesus work in your life until you become the person that you should be in Jesus? And we've been using a river as a diagram that it starts with our faith in Jesus. It continues on really with the gospel of Jesus, and that there are distinct tributaries that come into the river to help funnel and fuel your growth in Jesus, namely the Spirit of Jesus and the Word of Jesus and the Church of Jesus, even the practices of Jesus. And all of this is so that you can be with Jesus and become like Jesus and start to tell others about Jesus, make disciples for him. So we've covered all the nooks and crannies of this other than the practices of Jesus, which is where we find ourselves this morning. And if you want kind of the backlog of the sermon series, you can go to harvesttoyou.org. You can find those sermons and learn more about that and re-listen to them or listen to them for the first time if you'd like to. But here we are in the practices of Jesus. We even gave you a nice new bulletin shell. We changed the design and the color just to keep it fresh and to keep you engaged a little bit. But the practices of Jesus are something that I'm very, very excited about. We've preached through the practices of Jesus a couple years ago. This will not be a regurgitation of that, but it will be some of the same practices, different angles, different color, different scriptures to help you understand what were we talking about when we talk about the practices of Jesus. You can take the practices and boil them down into basically two buckets. Bucket one are what sometimes are called practices of engagement. Bucket two are practices of abstinence. The practices of engagement would be, this is not an extensive list, but some of them would be community, service, evangelism, hospitality, generosity. These will be very fitting for Missions Month. Today is the week before October. October is always our Missions Month. Today we'll even do a little bit of a soft launch into our Missions Month with a video about Operation Christmas Child here at the end of the service. But these will be very fitting because Missions Month is all about how are we engaging as a church and evangelizing as a church and being generous as a church and celebrating what we've done in the last 12 months and looking forward to what God's going to do over the next 12 months. I think it will pair so beautifully. Then we will get to, in November, the practices of abstinence, solitude and prayer and Sabbath and simplicity and fasting. And this will be deeply convicting because it will be the holiday season. And you will hear about simplicity and you will think, my life is anything but simple right now. The week after Thanksgiving, we'll talk about fasting and it'll step on your toes. But it'll be very helpful for us to walk through all of these practices, both of engagement and abstinence. But on the docket for today is a practice of engagement that is community. I have two very basic truths that I want to give you today. And if you understand these two basic truths, you'll get the gist of what we're talking about when we say that there was a practice of Jesus that was community. First, I'd like to tell you that Jesus didn't schedule community. He lived in community. Community for Jesus was not an occasion. It was a way of life. And I want that to sink in for a minute. When we talk about Jesus, we're not talking about some gray-bearded sage that sat on top of a mountain and people came to him sporadically to get some wisdom. That's not who Jesus was. Jesus lived in a mobile co-housing community that traveled around with him. Community was not something that was a hobby for him. It was a heartbeat for him. You would see this beginning in Luke chapter number 6, when it came to pass that Jesus, in those days, it says, he went out into a mountain to pray, which is beautiful. There's solitude. There's a practice of abstinence. He's getting away from people. And he continued all night in prayer to God. But then it says this, When it was day, he called unto him his disciples, and of them he chose 12, whom also he named the apostles. He calls disciples plural, not a BFF, but a group of people to come do life with him. And what happens to this band of merry men? They travel together, they eat together, they minister together, they fellowship together, they run errands together, they are together. You would find a great example of this just a couple chapters later in Luke chapter number 8, where it tells us that Jesus went through every city and village preaching and showing the glad tidings of the kingdom of God. And when we think of Jesus, we kind of think of this guy. He is traveling around. He's preaching glad tidings, good news. I have good news for you, the gospel. He's preaching the kingdom of God. We generally think of Jesus in this way, but notice the phrase at the end of the verse, and the 12 were with him. And not just the 12, it says certain women which had been healed of evil spirits and infirmities. Mary, called Magdalene, out of whom went seven devils. Joanna, the wife of Chuza, Herod's steward. Susanna, many others, which ministered to him of their substance. What is this saying? This is saying, what did Jesus do? Well, he traveled around. He preached the good news and the kingdom of God. How did Jesus do it? In community. That's what it's saying. He did it with the 12. And he did it with some women. And he did it with others also. And notice what it says. They ministered to him of their substance. If you think about Jesus living in community, you might be tempted to think, oh, he's in community to teach them and to show them and to be the rabbi, the sage, the master, which is true. But do not get the impression that it's a one-way street in community. And he's blessing them, helping them, teaching them. But he's never getting anything in return. That's not how community works. Community is a two-way street. It's a mutual exchange. He is teaching. He is leading. He is blessing. He is directing. But they're also ministering to him. They are providing lodging for him. They are providing funding for him. They are providing generosity to him. This community has a mutual benefit. Jesus to them, them to Jesus. And this is how he lived his life. You find that he lived his life the whole time this way. You get to the end of the life of Jesus. And part of the tragedy of the crucifixion is that these followers that he had so deeply invested in ran away like scared little rabbits, most of them. John's there at the cross, but everyone else is gone. And Peter's denying him. But 24 hours prior, Peter was saying that, no way, ride or die, I'm with you to the end. 24 hours later, or earlier, rather, Jesus is praying in the garden. You find this in Mark chapter number 14. That he's there in Gethsemane. And he begins to pray. And he says to his disciples, who are with him? Why were they with him? Because he didn't schedule community. He lived community. He said to them, sit here while I pray. And he took with him Peter and James and John and began to be sore amazed. What does it mean to be sore amazed? That's a confusing phrase. Well, it means this, to be very heavy. And he said to them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. My soul is so heavy, I feel like I'm going to die. I don't know if you've ever been there and you needed a friend just to be open and vulnerable with and to tell them, I am so in the thick of it right now that I don't know what to do. I hurt, and I'm heavy. And what does he want in these moments? He wants his men with him. He wants them to be there with him. What does he tell them? He tells them, tarry ye here, watch. Stay here with me, pray with me. He just doesn't want to be alone. He wants people around him. He wants the community to be there for him and just to help him and just to pray with him and to pray for him because he's going through it. This is not a surprise to us. I could show you 100 examples of this from the Gospels because literally it's the life of Jesus. He did not live in isolation. He lived integrated and intertwined lives with other people. And if you want to be a follower of Jesus, you can't do it another way. You could do it another way. It just won't be profitable. Let me say that. Jesus leaves. And what does he do? He leaves his spirit so that he will be with us always, even until the end of the world. And he establishes the church so that the church would be a place that serves a lot of different purposes, but where the followers of Jesus basically come together to learn the teachings of Jesus and practice the ways of Jesus and to be together in a community. That's not by accident or happenstance. That was on purpose so that the community of Jesus would continue to be a community. What's the point? The point's a very simple point and one that I don't think would be a huge newsflash to many of you. Jesus didn't schedule community as something he did once a week. He lived in community. You may be tempted to like just overlook that and miss that, but it's an important note from his life that he was in community. Now, why would he do this? Why would he set up the church so that the community could continue? Well, it's a very important question. There's a lot of answers to that, honestly. But perhaps the most basic answer to that question of why community is that you grow best when you grow together. Out of curiosity, who would say, don't raise your hands just yet, but who would say, I'm interested in growth. I'm interested in becoming a more loving person, becoming a more generous person, becoming someone who knows the scriptures better, becoming someone who enjoys prayer more, and in fact does pray more, becoming someone who it's easier for me to forgive than it used to be. It's easier for me to let go of those offenses and not nurse those grudges. I'm interested in growing honesty and character, integrity. Who would say, I would love to grow and mature in my Christian life? Raise of hands. Okay? You're like, is this a trick question? No, it's not a trick question. I don't think you'd be here if you weren't that interested in growth. You got to understand this. You grow best when you grow together. It is not to say there can be no growth and no maturation outside of community, but your growth will be stunted and truncated in many ways if you do not grow in community. And if you get this, you'll get the whole sermon. You grow best when you grow together. My oldest son, Brennan, is taking classes right now in sixth grade, and one of his classes is science, and he's at the point in the science year, I know this because we've been reviewing for quizzes and tests and different things, where they're learning about plants and specifically trees. As a matter of fact, he had a report due on trees this week. He had to pick a tree, and they're learning like what differentiates a tree from another plant, and they're learning about plants and biennials and perennials and all these sorts of things. But he had to pick a tree to do a report on, and he picked the palm tree, and on my couch right now at home is laying a poster board with pictures and data and stuff on palm trees. But we were just quizzing this last week, and one of the things he was quizzed on is what are the tallest trees in the world and what are the largest trees in the world as far as like circumference. And the largest are sequoias, and the tallest are, let's see if any of you would know. I'm going to quiz you. Are you smarter than a sixth grader? You ready? What's the tallest tree in the world? Ah, you guys are great. Redwoods. Anyone been, if you said palm tree, yeah, you were wrong. Sorry. How many of you have seen in Northern California, you've been to the Redwood Forest and you've seen the Redwoods? Okay? A good portion of you. If you ever get a chance, I'm telling you, go. It is amazing. You feel like you're on a different planet when you walk through a forest that has not 30-foot tall trees, but 300-foot tall trees. When you have a Statue of Liberty on top of a Statue of Liberty that is a tree, it's impossible to explain. I mean, it's so amazing to see. But what is interesting about a redwood tree, 300 foot tall, their root system, you would think would go halfway to China. The root system of a redwood tree is roughly 5 feet deep. Which begs the question, how does this thing not fall over? It's 300 feet tall and 5 feet deep. You think the slightest little wind, like you on it, and it would just face plant, you know? That's not enough of a root system. And the secret to a redwood is that the root system does not go deep, but the root system goes wide. And not only does it go wide, the root systems of each individual redwood lock hands with each other, and about 5 feet below the surface, they intertwine with each other. So that when a storm comes or a gust of wind comes, literally the forest is holding hands below the soil. And they support and hold each other up. They don't need to be that deep because they are all interlocked with each other. Now, I don't know that I could find a better analogy for community. Those trees can grow up because they are growing together. That's the only way they grow up, is they grow together. You are meant to grow up in Jesus. You are. But if you do not grow together in Jesus, you'll faceplant so fast. I think that Hebrews speaks into this. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 23 tells us, let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering. I want you to take your faith and I want you to hold fast. I don't want you to topple over. I don't even want you to waver. I want you to be rock solid. Well, how might we be rock solid? I know. I'll just be a palm tree all by my lonesome, just blowing in the wind, and I'll just hold strong. That's not what it says. How might you hold fast? Next verse. Let us consider one another to provoke one another to love and to good works. Think about each other. Push them to love more. Push them to engage in good works. Push them to be generous. Push them to go on the mission trip. Invite them into your group. Have them over your house and pray for them. Provoke them. Next verse. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is. Don't stop getting together. Don't stop being the community. Some people have stopped this. Some people have this manner. They've stopped assembling themselves. Don't do that. Why? Because you want to hold fast. You don't want to waver. Next phrase. But exhorting one another, encouraging one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. It's almost as if Paul had redwoods in mind when he says, lone trees fall, but forests, they stand. Be together. Hold fast and don't waver. How do I do that? You need community for that. You got to love each other. You got to provoke each other to good works. You got to encourage each other. You got to be together. You've got to grow together. I thought through this week the churches I've been a part of. I was born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky, my whole life. By the way, Louisville came to town yesterday and played the Pitt Panthers and 34-27. I hate to rub it in for all the Pitt fans, but go Cards. L's up. You know what I'm saying? Louisville, my whole life. So much I learned that one church that whole time. I moved away to college and was at one church that whole time I was in college in Arkansas. Then church in California, ministering and those sorts of things, and then here. And I was thinking through the churches I've been a part of and how the community has shaped me in different ways. And every single church, I could take different aspects of my Christian life and speak to how that specific community shaped me. But Arkansas came to mind. The church there was called Gospel Light, and I did not know this going into the church, but they had a system of prayer, actually several layers to a system of prayer that was surprising to me and things that I had never heard of, things that I had never done before, but I was very encouraged and I was very curious, and I began to jump into kind of the prayer life that the church offered that was very communal. They had a daily prayer rhythm for members, if you wanted to be a part, called the prayer team. And the prayer team was a whole bunch of people, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred. And they split them up into men and women, and they would partner you, a man with a man or a woman with a woman, for a month. And your job was to call each other every day and pray with and for each other. That was it. If you're on the prayer team, it was, here's your partner, here's their number. Oftentimes, you did not even know this person. You're like, I go to church with them, but I don't know who John, you know, Johnson is. I have no idea. But you call each other and you get to know each other. And on Monday, we'll say John would pray for me. And on Tuesday, I would pray for John. And you just keep doing that back and forth, back and forth. And the goal was to pray every day for a month. I can't say that I did that very often. Most of the time it was like 23 days or 25 days because you got busy or you forgot or work went late or whatever it was. But, you know, the majority of the time you'd pray together every day. Every week they had a prayer meeting at church on Saturday evening in preparation for church. When I was there, the church was maybe 1,200 people or so, and probably only 70, 75 people showed up for prayer meeting. But I was like, I want to show up. I want to do this. And so every Saturday we'd pray together. 30 minutes, not super long, but probably 30 minutes. They had monthly a team that was invited to pray while the service went on, that you would, before the service, go pray like over the preacher or the pastor who was preaching that day. You'd come to church, you'd sing with the congregation, and when you do the shake hand time, you would go back behind the stage, and instead of listening to the preaching, you would just pray for the preaching and for God to work and God to move, and you could do that once a month. And there'd be maybe 3, 4, 5 of you back there praying during the service. And then they had annually, I didn't know this until like several months into being there, that they had an all-night prayer, whatever you want to call it, prayer vigil, prayer meeting, watch night service, but it was basically 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. We're going to pray all through the night. This had I not only never done, I hadn't ever really heard of this, and I wanted to do it, but I was also like, I don't think that's possible. Like, I'm definitely going to fall asleep. Like, I'm going to come in and we're going to like kneel down and like, see you in 8 hours and we're going to pray. I'm like, I'm definitely falling asleep. Little did I know it was very interactive. It would be like, let's pray for 20 minutes with a partner and then let's have a little devotional and let's break up and pray for 20 minutes on your own and have a devotional. Then we'll have someone lead us in prayer. And they kept it moving and we prayed all night long. Now, my prayer life in that stage of life began to explode in ways that I never even knew were possible. I had been a Christian for a long time. I had heard sermons on prayer. I had read books on prayer. And I prayed. Like, I prayed for my meal. I had a prayer list. It wasn't like I never prayed before. I even had a class for a semester on prayer. But being in a community of people that were praying together, whether it be one-on-one or whether it be in a group on the weekend or whether it be an all-night prayer meeting, it exploded my prayer life. And I, to be completely frank, I began to enjoy prayer. I didn't know that was an option. I did not know that prayer could be enjoyable. Now, praying for 30 seconds for my food, it's not like that was unenjoyable, but any sort of prayer life that I had experienced up until that point was drudgery. I mean, it was work. It was something that I didn't enjoy. I did not enjoy it. Now, that's not God's fault. I was probably doing it wrong. Not probably, I was doing it wrong. But when I began to pray with people, here's the point. It wasn't that I was spending more time in prayer. That was not the key. If you take all the time that I was spending in prayer, you know, you have 10 minutes a day with someone on the phone. Let's say I just prayed 10 minutes a day on my own. And then on Saturday night, you have 30 minutes. Let's say I prayed 39 Saturday minutes on my own. And once a month for this service, you're praying for like 45 minutes while the sermon's going on. Let's say I did that once a month on my own. I could have taken the same amount of time and prayed all by myself. It would not have had nearly the effect that it had praying with other people in community. And I don't even know how to explain this fully, but there was just something about being with other people and hearing them pray. I can still remember lines and prayers from specific individuals 20 years later. I can still hear Al Arduengo praying behind the pulpit and the stage for the service that the Spirit of God would move and that God would bind Satan and that people would be spoken to and that conviction would fall and things. I don't even know, like, to even think to pray that. I can still remember Randy Posey in an all-night prayer meeting praying for his wife and thinking, just kind of as a fly on the wall in this little group, listening to Randy pray, thinking, man, I want to pray for my future wife, or I want to pray for my wife like that one day. And just being with people in community and trying to grow in the practice of prayer together, it began to accelerate things in ways that I don't know how to fully comprehend or even explain. All I know is this. With that particular practice of prayer, I grew best when I was growing together with other people. And when I think back through my Christian life, whether it be service or whether it be generosity or whether it be learning the scriptures, I find this to be true over and over and over again. I learned how to study the Bible best when I was in Bible study with other people and there was a mentor and there was a class and we were learning and growing and challenging and asking questions and we were doing it together. And I learned best about generosity, not from reading a book, but from my mom or my dad teaching me how to tithe and what that meant and how to do that and some accountability in my life. Like, I learned best in the community. And I don't think that that's an accident. I know that's the way Jesus set it up, that you're going to grow best when you grow in community. Now, before I make this applicable, let me at least give you a handful of enemies to community. You have to be aware that there are cultural waters that we swim in that are pulling you away from community. And that if this is a big part of your life, like it was for Jesus, you are going to have to swim upstream. You're going to have to. But the effort's going to be worth it. Here are some things that detract us from community. Number one is individualism. Our culture, I'm not going to even try to argue all the reasons why we are individualistic. I will just make the statement, assume you agree with me, that we are. Church attendance has been cut in half over the last 50 years. But it's not just church attendance. You see that stat as a pastor, and you're like, oh, I guess it's a church thing. No, it's a community thing. Robert Putnam has a book called Bowling Alone, and it's not a Christian book. It's just a book on community. And he makes the argument that, like, community all over the place has just been detracted from over and over again in our culture because we're so individualistic. And he uses bowling leagues as an analogy. But whether it's a bowling league or church attendance, it's half the people now want to opt into this. You also just have busyness that your schedule is so crowded that you choke out time for relationships. Oftentimes, community isn't lost to bad things. It's just lost to too many things. And it does take a concerted effort to not have a calendar on your iPhone that looks like a game of Tetris with everything being fit together and no free space. Oftentimes, we're just too busy for this. I would love to show up for a group on Wednesday night. I got too much on my plate. You also find that consumerism is at the heart of what detracts us from community, especially in churches. It is increasingly popular to treat church as a product or something that you can consume for your own benefit rather than a family to belong to. And while I do understand this to a degree, and I'm not even mad at you for operating that way because we operate this way in so many other areas of our life, I would love to upgrade your thinking. I would love for your thinking to stop being, what am I getting out of this or what are we getting out of this, to how can I give myself in love? The day that you trade, what do I get out of this when it comes to church, to how can I give myself in love, is the day that you are better as a Christian and our church is better as a whole. Consumerism is at the heart of what sometimes makes it hard for community. Comfort seeking. we are so comfortable almost all the time, whether it be electricity or air conditioning or our beds or our cars. I mean, everything is designed to keep us comfortable nowadays. And community is anything but comfortable or convenient. You have to know this. You have to have your expectations set up front. Having community is not convenient at all. It is going to require effort. It's going to require time. It's going to require vulnerability. It's going to require sacrifice. It's going to require disappointment. Jesus wanted his boys to pray with him when his soul was exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death in the garden. And guess what they did? They fell asleep. You think that was at all disappointing? And guess what they did after that? They ran away. After 3 years of investment and living together, they deny him, they forsake him. That comes with community sometimes, that someone lets you down or they don't show up and then you have to learn how to forgive them. That's all part of it. But I would encourage you, embrace the pain, hug the cactus, and be willing to have some inconvenience and discomfort in your life for the good of community. You also find that conflict avoidance is part of what moves people away from this. Fear of hard conversations, fear of needing to put yourself in a spot where they could hurt you. I know that some of you would come from a background where there was some church hurt that came your way from the pastor or from an individual or from whoever it was. And that can cause you to be very skittish when it comes to being involved or really merging into the community. I understand that. Like, I get the fear. But I am here to lovingly tell you that fear is going to put you in isolation, and that will be worse than the risk of vulnerability and someone hurting you. I can almost guarantee you someone will hurt you again, but even that will help you grow and mature as you learn to forgive and you learn to put up with people. Like, you're doing yourself a disservice if you move into isolation and away from community. There's so much more I could say on that, and we will as we get to November and we talk about simplicity and we talk about busyness and we talk about Sabbath. We'll talk a lot about these things, but I'll leave it there just to let you know it's not easy. I don't want to pretend that it is easy to live in community with other believers in Jesus. It's not easy. I'm going to read the story of Jesus. You find that as well. Jesus had to put up with their nonsense a lot. They're constantly jockeying for position. They're getting their mom involved. And like, mom, would you go to my boss for me and try to see if I can get the best seat or if he'll give me a promotion? You know, it's weird sometimes. And Jesus is like, what are you doing? You know? But it will be worth it. It'll be worth it if you engage and you say, listen, I want to grow. If you're after growth and I'm after growth, we grow best when we grow together. I think Dallas Willard said it so best. He said the good life that Jesus has on offer, it's one that requires some regular and profound conjunction with others who share it. And the good life that Jesus has on offer is greatly diminished when this profound conjunction with others is missing. Now, let me be very practical. Some of you, I am speaking your language right now. Like, I am singing your tune, and you're like, yeah, tell them, you know? I've been showing up, and I'm engaging, and I'm there in group, and I'm vulnerable, and I'm calling people to see how they're doing. We need more people like that. Tell them. And if that's you, good on you. Keep it up. May this be wind in your sails. Keep loving. Keep investing. Just go a mile a minute. Others of you, though, for one reason or another, would say that this idea of community is hard. Perhaps you're more introverted and you're like, give me the practices of abstinence. I want solitude in my Bible and I do not want people around. Perhaps it's more of church hurt in your background. Perhaps it is busyness. There's a lot of reasons why. But for one reason or another, there's some of you that while you're here in church, it's very possible that you're together, but you are functionally very alone. I don't think deep down you want that for you. And I certainly don't want that for you. So what do? I know. I'll email Pastor Mark and say, I need you to be my best friend. I want to be in community. Well, I can't be your best friend to everybody, okay? What do you do practically if you want to upgrade and have more community? I'm not going to pretend that this is an extensive list, but let me give you just a handful of suggestions that may help. They're very practical, but hopefully very helpful. Number one, I'd show up and I'd show up early. Let's start by showing up. I'd show up to church. Those of you that are live streaming, give me this middle camera right here. If you're live streaming, I love you. Maybe you're sick today. Maybe you're shut in. Maybe you're traveling. No problem at all. But listen to me. If you're at home in your pajamas just because it's more convenient or easier than coming here week after week after week, that's unhealthy for you. It's not helpful. You need to be together. And you have to understand there are actual shut-ins who would give their left arm to be here on a week-to-week basis. I got to experience this just a minute ago. We were singing it as well, one of my favorite hymns, possibly my favorite hymn ever. And we're singing, and I just stop in the middle of that song and shut my mouth and listen to you all sing. And I know that the singing comes through on a live stream or something like that, but in no way, shape, or form like it does when you're in the room. And whether you realize it or not, if you were singing during that song in any way, shape, or form, those collective voices blessed my soul this morning. You need the church. You need community for that to happen. You got to show up for that to happen. And when you show up, I would encourage you, show up early. You say, how early? Here would be my goal. I would be in my seat 9 minutes early. You say, 9 minutes, why nine? I don't know, it's a random number. Maybe it'll stick. Honestly, it's probably enough time. I mean, we don't need you here 90 minutes early like that. You could come, be here, pray. But 9 minutes is probably enough. 9 minutes is enough time to sit there, to have a meaningful conversation with someone for 5 minutes who maybe is in your area a lot. I haven't seen you in 3 weeks. Where have you been? How have you been? What's been going on in your life? Tell me this, getting caught up with people, like being here, knowing people. It's not going to be helpful if you come in 3 minutes after the service starts, after the first song, and then you leave as quick as you can out the back door. You're never going to meet anyone. You're never going to learn a new name. You're going to truncate what is supposed to be even community happening right now. Talking with people and knowing people and getting their phone number or finding out something about their life. And then, oh, okay, I'm going to follow you on Facebook. And then I see next week that your grandson had a birthday and ask you about it in church. Like the stuff that is community, the stuff that is relational. You're going to have to like show up and come in here a little bit early before we start the service. By the way, it's also considerate to the music team when you like show up and are here before we start the service, because they prepared some stuff for you and they want to bless you. And when you skip half the music, like it's a little bit rude probably even. So come in early. Don't rush out of here. Community will happen that way in small ways. Jump into a group. We got groups all over the place. I met Joe in the first service. I didn't really know Joe. I guess he's been here a handful of weeks. And I got to meet him for the first time. And Joe told me, he said, I got in a men's group in the last couple of weeks. And I said, which one? The one on Monday night or the one on Wednesday night? He said, no, the one on Saturday morning. I thought, I love that I didn't even remember that one, that there's multiple options, right? That there's this one and that one and this one. And we do that on purpose. We do that to give you options to try to work with your schedule. But there's groups on Sundays and there's groups on Wednesdays and there's groups on Mondays and Saturdays and Thursdays. They're all over the place. Opt into one. You don't have to do 10. Excuse me, my voice just gave out. You don't have to do 10. No one's expecting you to show up to group like the Apostle Paul with your spiritual cape flapping in the wind and educate them on all the theology in the Bible. No. Show up, be willing to learn, eat some tacos while you're at it, and have a good time. It's not like a massive ask, but go jump in a group. Jump on a team. Serve shoulder to shoulder with other people. I saw someone today who was on the music team who had never been in the music team. I caught him in between services and said, I've never seen you up there before. I'm glad that you're joining the team. I love to see that. Find a team. We'll gladly plug you into one. You want to operate some cameras together? You want to greet at the door together? You want to go work in kids ministry together? There's so many opportunities. I know 500 or so of you, close to 500, serve at least on a monthly basis, but jump on a team and find that there's community there, shoulder to shoulder. Check on someone. Boy, I was convicted of this yesterday. I was at Pat Rinkus's funeral yesterday. Her family is right here. Tom, Kevin, right here. Joe did a beautiful job leading that service. And over again, if you didn't know Pat, I mean, you didn't know an angel. So special, and our church is going to have such a hole. Her presence and her prayers are going to be so, so desperately missed. But Pat was the queen of checking up on people. She was so relational, and she was always going to ask you more questions than you asked her. She would call, she would text, and there were people all at that funeral who just had that testimony over and over of the love that she had in their life because she just cared about them. Just a, hey, how'd the doctor's appointment go? I've been praying for you. Just as someone was sharing with me at the funeral, we're sitting there, and she said, I'd call Pat mad about something. I couldn't be mad for 10 seconds. She was, well, let's pray about it. It was just, she was just concerned and loving and helpful. Check in on someone. Statistics say you're on your phone like 5 hours a day. Spend 2 minutes of it to shoot a text or check in. Let someone know that you're praying for them. Practice vulnerability. This is hard. I'm not suggesting when I say practice vulnerability that you walk in, someone greets you at the door, and you just trauma dump your whole life on them. I'm not saying that. But like, start to open up. Get beyond, how about them Steelers? And I hope they're doing well. They're playing right now. Don't tell me the score, okay? I want to watch it later, so don't tell me after the service. But get beyond kind of casual stuff and start to open up to someone. You'll be surprised at how community is formed. Now, I could go on and on with a list, but here's the point. This is something that was a big deal to Jesus, not just in the sense that he told us to do it, but in the sense that he lived it. And if you want to grow in Jesus, you got to grow together. You can have a measure of growth on your own with your individualized, privatized Christian life, but you will never have the growth that you're meant to until you grow together. Community is a beautiful thing when done well. I think we're good at this as a church. I think there's a measure of infectious love that people feel when they come into this body of believers. But I also think that we could do better at it. That there could be more of this heartbeat of, I want to grow, so let us grow together.
We pray that today's message has been an encouragement to your heart. At Harvest to You, we're passionate about sharing gospel-centered content that brings hope and truth to people's lives. We understand that not everyone watching this is in a position to give. And if that's you, we would genuinely value your prayers for this ministry. But if God has blessed you financially, we'd love to invite you to join our tribe and support what God is doing here. And as a way of saying thanks, I'd love to send you a copy of my new book, The Prayer Jesus Gave. To give and get a copy of this book, just visit harvesttoyou.org/give. We so appreciate your gift.